for the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another weekly look at the world of Non-League Football. Yes, it's FA Vars semi-final time, and we open the show with Thillanets in his at FA Vars Facfar hat, giving us insight into this season's competition and the four sides remaining left looking for that place at Wembley. Then we head north to one of the clubs involved. This week also has a creative arts feel, so we speak to the media guy pitting in the hours to ensure Lincoln United are a club people are talking about up and down the land and across the world. Charlie Fitch is still in his early 20s, but already doing great stuff for the world of non-league. Talking about the world of non-league, my next guest is a filmmaker, but at heart a non-league fan too. Yes, Jack Spring has made a documentary series about his beloved Grimsby Town's last magical season back in non-league, and that's out now on Amazon Prime. It's driven by the kind of human interest, people-led stories that make us love non-league, and well worth a watch. Rounding up the week's news is John Couch of the Non-League Paper, and another bumper show ahead of an Easter weekend, hopefully just as packed with non-league action. It's time to sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So we reach the semi-finals of the FA Vars, four teams left, and there is of course only one man to turn to. The man in the know on all things Vars, as our American partners would tell us. Let's give a warm welcome back to the Non-League Football Show at FA Vars Fact File, Mr. Thillanets. Hello, Phil.
Hello, Tim. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm hoping that there might be some chopped flowers to put in a vase at some point. I'm looking at the wind outside, but... Four left then, Phil.
Yes.
And we know that we're going to have a new name on that competition trophy.
We do indeed, yeah. We started off with 597 clubs this season. We're now down to four, and as you quite rightly say, all four are semi-finalists for the first time, which means we will have a new name on the trophy in its 50th season.
And, I mean, history in the making then, but it's perhaps fitting that in the 50th year of the competition, even the competition goes one better than your favourite stat.
Yes, I can't get by without this stat being quoted, can I? The fact that every single FA Vars final has contained at least one club appearing in the final for the very first time. Well, obviously, this year, both clubs will be stepping out at Wembley in the final for the first time in their history, which is very exciting for whoever gets there.
I think it is. I think it adds to the excitement when we get to talk about these games coming up. And we're back to the two-legged semi-finals as well. After a number of years, I've previously nailed my colours to the mast, being a traditionalist, and I think you possibly concur, it sort of gives a balance for such a big game. Although I think the weather could yet add weight to those arguing against us.
Well, yeah, I think fixture congestion and weather impact is not great. And if you compare two legs versus a single leg tie at one of the club's grounds, I think I prefer the two legs. But in an ideal world, we would have neutral grounds for the semi-finals. But, you know, the feasibility of organising a match at a neutral ground when we don't know what the weather conditions are going to be like anyway, and all the issues that go on with organising games at this level, I think it is the better of the two options that are available.
Yeah, the feasibility of organising any game at the moment is difficult from someone as involved in that. Two representatives from the Essex Senior League, one from the United Counties Premier, one from the Hellenic League. It's almost following that recent trend away from the northern strength in the competition in recent years. That, you think, to do with the pyramid restructure?
I think it has been a factor of the pyramid restructure, plus I think also where the rule is that if clubs are eligible for promotion, they need to take promotion. Otherwise, they get demoted, don't they, or something, if they refuse to go up. So a lot of the Northern clubs, particularly Northern League clubs, would have stayed at step five, preferring to stay at that level, which is something they now cannot do. And obviously, they moved into the step four and gone beyond step four, the quality that the teams from in that part of the country, which has seen a swing, as you said, to a bit of a dominance to the lower half of the country, for want of a better term.
Yeah, and interestingly, for the Essex Senior League, the one with the two representatives in the form of Great Wakering Rovers and Romford, because it's quite a while since they last had a winner in this competition.
Yeah, even a finalist, yes. So it's 40 years since the Essex Senior League was represented in the FA Advanced Final. That was Stansted back in 1984. So, yeah, to have the possibility of both finalists coming from that league is quite a step change for them. And I'm sure they're extremely excited about the prospect of one or even both of their clubs being in the final next month.
Yeah, I'd imagine positions on the Essex Senior League are probably available on eBay, aren't they? They're probably quite a popular role at the moment with a chance of that FA Vars final appearance at Wembley. The Hellenic League's Worcester City, they're hosting Great Wakering Rovers in that first leg on Saturday, if weather permits, of course. And I'd certainly be expecting goals on the menu.
Well, this is what happens, isn't it? You get two top-scoring clubs, as they are, 28 and 23 goals between them, each. And, you know, it sort of ends up being 0-0 when you finally get together. We see that quite often, don't we? But no, I think that should be a very exciting couple of games. Hopefully, we get the game on Saturday, and it's still close when we take the game back to Essex.
Yeah, in a way you could understand if it was goalless. I think they've played so many games in this competition already, and other games elsewhere. You look at the demands on these players, and of course, you know, they'll run an extra mile and extra 15 miles. Certainly, if they get to Wembley, they probably need to. But it does show the standard and the quality of physicality of even these players that are playing at step five.
Well, I mean, they have a full league season, and they've got a fantastic run in the Vars. And this is for both Worcester City and Great Wakering Rovers. It will be their ninth tie. So, you know, to have already played eight ties in the competition from way back in the beginning of August. We saw it last season at Manascot United won. The Vars last season, and started in the first qualifying round. But you know, to go all the way to Wembley and to win the thing, having to win 10 games, that's a lot of additional games to your standard season.
And elsewhere on Saturday, hopefully, Romford will play host to Lincoln United at the United Counties League. Again, history will be made, we know that, whatever the result. But I was wondering if there's... And I'm not trying to catch you out here, Phil. I'm just, it's just something that's funny. Has any nomadic side ever won the competition? Because Romford, of course, currently playing home games, including this one, at East Thurrock United's former home at Rookery Hill in Stamford La Hope.
Yeah, I am being caught out on this one. I'm not prepared to answer whether a team has lifted the Vars previously, having had to play all of their games at a different ground to their home ground, or even at different grounds throughout the season. So, yeah, it is quite an achievement, isn't it, if you're playing at a different location in your hometown, to still do well and to take the team forward. So it's good for them, and they'll be confident of doing well to try and get to Wembley as well themselves.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be probably some statisticians out there that would suggest if you're ground sharing, you're not at home, so then potentially they could win the whole competition by playing away. That would be an interesting one. And regards to that fixture as well, Lincoln United, having been relegated to step five at the end of last season, they lost in the interstep playoff to Avro. So potentially, I'm thinking that they could become the first finalists of the Vars, made possible by a playoff, because obviously, albeit they lost it, they fell into the Vars rather than the FA Trophy. If they won the playoff and stayed up, I've got to say, I think your influence is rubbing off on me, Phil.
Yeah, you're definitely looking for the quirky stats now. I like that. I like the way that's going. Yeah, but they you're right. They came in and they wouldn't have wanted to have dropped down, obviously. And it's almost 30 years since the club appeared in the Vars. But you know, it's a little bit of a sweetener, I guess, that they have been able to do very well. And in the semi-finals for the first time, as all the other teams are. Interestingly, from them, their previous best run in the Vars was in the very first season that the competition ran back in 1974-75 when they made the quarterfinals. So you know, it's taken them a while, but they've eventually surpassed their previous best in the competition.
I can already see the storyboard of my Hollywood blockbuster for Lincoln United on this one. So we'll speak to a filmmaker later on. Maybe I can chuck that one into the mix for him. So just the two matches to choose from then this weekend, four sides. Anything else that's grabbed your attention, Phil?
Well, I think I myself, of the two ties, I'm going to try and get to Worcester City. I hope to get up there with the weather that we see on the weekend will be our friend or not, we'll see. But for me, on a personal level, it will be my 250th different ground wow. that I've been to. And whilst that might not be big numbers for the likes of people like Tony and Genzo, for someone like me who only sporadically goes around the country, it's not a bad tally to have under my belt. Let's hope that I can get there on Saturday and the game goes ahead.
Well, I'm sure they'll be welcoming you with open arms. Before I let you go, though, remind people where they can find out more information on all the great work you do with the FA Vars and indeed the FA Cup.
Yeah, so I'm best to be found on Twitter, /X, and using the FA Vars fact file and FA Cup fact file names. And from there, you can get access to my blogs and most importantly, I guess, my previews of the semi-finals for the FA Vars this season.
Well, Phil Annett, it's always a pleasure to get you on the Non-League Football Show. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Cheers, Tim. Speak to you again.
So let's continue then with the FA Vars and indeed that Romford against Lincoln United match. As mentioned, fate has a funny way of working, and after the misery of inter-playoff defeat put them in the FA Vars pool, they're now just one win away from Wembley. Juggling that roller coaster of emotions has been the task of their communications director this season. So let's see how he's coping and provide a warm Non-League Football Show welcome to communications director at Lincoln United, Mr. Charlie Fitch. Welcome, Charlie.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, it's good to get you on. And I love the. Obviously, I try and do as much research as possible about clubs that we haven't had on before. And I love the fact that the club has been at Ashby Avenue since its formation as Lincoln Amateurs back in 1938. Does that mean that these two legs, are they the biggest games in the history of the club?
I think they're certainly up there. I think we've had our two FA Cup first round proper games in previous years. But yeah, I think this is definitely up there. I think if we make it all the way, I think, yeah, it'll be up there.
And as I mentioned, that club losing in the inter-club playoff to drop into step five this season, every cloud has a silver lining, of course. I doubt you would have made the semi-final of the FA Trophy had you been there. By relegation, you're now 180 minutes away from Wembley. We talk about, you know, Hollywood's loving non-league football. Maybe yours is the next story that they'll pick up on.
Well, hopefully, yeah. You said it there. That relegation sort of thing. Like, we had a season before last season where we just survived last game. And then last season, it felt like it was coming, and it did come eventually. I think we had a moment where we sat there and we said, oh, look, we keep an awful story for ourselves. And we pick ourselves up and look, we get out of this league. That's the ambition. But the, yeah, I think, yeah, you said 180 minutes away from Wembley. That's going to happen with dream.
Yeah, it is. And as the media man, you do have to juggle that roller coaster of emotions. And as somebody that's been there for big games and for the difficult times as well with my own club, can you give listeners an insight into, I mean, the number of hours involved by folk like yourself when you get a big game like this?
Like the past couple of months as a whole have been been so busy. It's been like 30 hours on top of your job. But yeah, I think it's worth it because I'm a fan deep down, and I think people understand that are around the club, that we are all fans, we are supporters of clubs. Like when we beat Deal Town, I think I was the first one on the pitch celebrating with the keeper, Stegs. So yeah, it makes it all worth it, and you've just got to keep putting yourself going, because you know, come the end of the season, we'll look back at it and there'll be fond memories, hopefully.
Yeah, and yeah, I get to talk to clubs up and down the pyramid. You know, I talk to people in the National League, and there's a media team of maybe, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 people. Every day, new technologies seem to appear, and the job just keeps growing. What about yourself? Are you the man that does everything?
I wouldn't like to say I do everything, but yeah, I think that there's only me on the men's side, and then we've got another guy that helps me out with the women's on the Sunday, but our weekends are Saturday, Sunday, as well as midweek. And then, yeah, we've got a lot of new technology sort of coming through. England, so we've got a VO camera, etc. That was a new thing recently. That's another thing we've got to set up as well onto our tasks.
Yeah, and yeah, just give people an idea of the club. Yeah, the club's on the up. You've got something like 32 teams, haven't you, across men's, youth and women's football. It's just, you know, you're quite a force, although I guess you've got that badge of the second club in Lincoln. Does that weigh heavy, or is that annoying? Is it a good thing?
I think second club in Lincoln. It's a nice thing, if that makes sense. Obviously, we're up against the Football League side of Lincoln City. But then, look at us, we've got 32 teams across our junior section, as well as our men's and women's side. The women at the minute are flying. They're top of the league undefeated. They've only lost one game this season. That was their FA Cup game against the league at Bordside, Loughborough. And then, yeah, the men, last Wednesday, Cumbria County Cup champions. And, yeah, everything's going smoothly at the moment. But you've got to take their highs with the lows. And at the moment, over the last 5 years, we've had a lot of lows.
Yeah, Romford, your host on Saturday. I mean, how you're the first man on the pitch, as you say, after that win against former winners Deal Town. You beat them on penalties. I mean, how involved are you with the management team? Are you sort of the gathering information and trying to give them as much information on the strikers, defenders, and everything like that on the opposition for the weekend?
No, I can't take credit for that. Our assistant manager Matt is a very statistical guy. He's always asking me questions on how he can get the stats better. I think he messaged me today asking, can he get the VO footage within an hour after the game, which unfortunately impossible. But yeah, the management team are very analytic and rewatching the games back over and over and over again.
And you say you're a fan. How long have you been involved with the club? Because, you know, you're still a young gun.
Yeah, I'm only 22. I got involved back in, I want to say, 2020, yeah, about 2020, just after COVID, 2021. We was Highcombe, and then we turned into Lincoln United. Well, we merged with Lincoln United, and yeah, and then Chris asked me to get involved with the manager, and then since then, yeah, I've going to every game as much as possible. But then I've worked my way up the club a bit. I started off as media officer, then got head of media, and then started the season I got asked to be a director.
Which is brilliant, because we need younger people involved in non-league football at every level, but particularly at board level, and sort of pushing these clubs through. And what about your own ambitions? Have you always wanted to be a journalist?
I wouldn't say no. No. But everyone wants to play football, don't they?
Yeah.
No, that wasn't for me, sort of thing. I don't like. I say that I enjoy playing it, but not at the level that these boys do. I'm not skillful enough. But yeah, good question. To be fair, no, and yeah, I enjoy what I do. But I think if something else come about, I probably wouldn't. I enjoyed it because I'm a hobby, it's a hobby, and I'm a fan.
Yeah. I think that's probably how everybody got involved. You know, I'd done my crew shirts. There was an advert in the local paper back then. They did exist to help with the programme. And 26 years later, I'm still there, and I'm still issuing press releases this evening as we're doing things. I don't know. Have you seen the news? We retweeted it. It's been covered by a number of outlets that after two seasons at Mousel FC, who are in the Southern League Premier, Southern League South, Division One, there, so Step Four, Pablo Walls Blanco,
he's reported on his final match after 2 years at Mousel because he's flying out to Spain to begin a new career with FC Barcelona as a journalist, content creator and sports commentator for their brand Marca One. You never know. You know, everything that we do for non-league does get picked up somewhere.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we were looking at our stats after the deal game, and we had 2.9 million impressions on Twitter and just over the weekend. And like you say, well, it's seen. These games are sort of things where you've got a good social media sort of thing. Other clubs look at it and go, wow, fair play. Mm. On a small budget, what can I do on a big budget? And I think hopefully clubs other than us, media officers have seen, because there's a lot of good media officers in our league.
Yeah. And you, I guess, you know, like all of us, if you're involved in non-league, yeah, people don't really understand it. Do you get ribbed by your mates? Or now you're only 180 minutes from Wembley, maybe they want to come along and sort of give you a little bit more credibility?
Sometimes you do, yeah. Sometimes there's a question like why, like last season we were off up to like Newcastle on Tuesday night, and they rib you a bit then, sort of thing, what a waste of your time. But yeah, I think now they're looking at it and going, actually, fair play to you. Wow, you've put your time and effort in. Like some of the guys that I work with sort of question me all the time, asking, so what do you do? Why do you do it? Is it paid? No, it's voluntary. Well, why do you waste your time? And it, like a lot of them come up to me this week, wow, you're only that far away from Wembley. Yeah. Oh, fair play to you. And it's a nice feeling. I think a lot of them starting to understand.
Yeah, and this weekend, I'd imagine that means an early start. Romford playing at East Thurrock's former ground down in the depths of Essex, I suggest. Do you travel down on the coach? And does your day start before you even get on the coach? Because you've got a multitude of jobs to do.
Yeah, so the coach itself leaves at 9 o'clock in the morning. We're taking 3 coaches down. But yeah, my day will start about 7:30 down at the ground, hopefully. If all things go well, hopefully no earlier than that. But yeah, but as soon as the final whistle goes, the job's not over.
Yeah.
The job's going all the way back on the bus, making sure all the posts are scheduled. And then again, we're away with the women on Sunday. And then we're away on the Monday with a 12:30 kickoff. So it's a long weekend.
One of the reasons to get you on is a hat tip from people like myself to say thank you for all of that. I mean, the club are second in the United Counties Premier, 8 points behind Sherwood Colliery. You're already guaranteed a playoff spot, I think. But that infers even more games. So you've got this double-legged FA Vars semi-final. You mentioned there's women's games as well that you'll be involved in. I think the men's first team have already played over 50 games this season. Now, it's often discussed the impact on the players of all these games, but the off-the-field guys as well, like yourself, it's a big commitment, not only physically, but also mentally.
Yeah. I think I was speaking to manager Chris, because he manages the women as well at the moment, yeah. And he was saying, I think he'd come up to about his 75th game of the season, and I was all in with him already. Yeah, it's a big old task. I'm quite lucky, to be brutally honest with you, because I don't have a big team, but past couple of weeks, obviously things have got a bit busy. And I'm lucky because I've got, there's a university group called Link Sport who have been helping me out massively. Anytime I've just got a question, because they're doing the university, if I ask them a question, can you help me out with this? Straight away, no problem. Of course I can. What can we do to make it a bit easier on you? Because they understand that obviously I've got a job that comes with it, a full-time job. So, yeah. What? I've got a lot of praise for them because they couldn't not help, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, those sort of partnerships and those sort of people helping you out that makes it a little bit easier, but they're also, you know, likely to be relationships you keep for life. I remember my own team, when we were just yetting, we drew Newcastle United at home in the FA Cup third round, and had some great help by the embryonic team back then behind the London 2012 Olympics, the press team, media team then. And I don't, you know, without them, we probably wouldn't have got through. But there was some great assistance from various people there, and you know, we are a non-league network, so I'm sure if ever you get stuck, there's plenty of media people out there. As you said, even in your division, you've got to know some great people churning stuff out. So this weekend, I don't suppose you're going to get a chance to put your feet up. You've got the second leg next week. You're at home in that second leg. Does that mean more work for you?
Yeah. So the Link Sports boys are going to help me out by doing that, because I think we're expecting about 1,500, hopefully, for that game. So it's going to be packed Ashby Avenue. You say that, we've got the midweek game, then the women have got the County Cup final on the Wednesday. So it's going to be a packed whole week. Honestly, yeah. So, who knows what happens?
Well, I'll give you one piece of advice. Next, obviously, this week, big game, and you make sure you enjoy it as much as possible. But next week, when you're at home, do take at least 30 seconds to sort of go to the highest point of the ground or something like that, just take it all in, because you know, as you've learned, it's not always positive and lovey dovey. Sometimes we hit some rocky times as well, and it's the wonderful times that make us realise why we all do it. Charlie Fitch, I wish you luck in the semi-finals for the FA Vars, and also you know, potential playoffs in that United Counties Premier League. But I thank you for all your work so far. Congratulations as well on the fast track promotion, and good luck. And stay in touch. We'll speak to you soon.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Now, a few weeks back, I signed off the show and mentioned a new non-league documentary on Amazon Prime, and it's actually sparked off a number of conversations, actually, on social with listeners. So much so, I thought it was a great opportunity to speak with the fan behind the series. So it's a pleasure to welcome to the Non-League Football Show, director of the Grimsby Town documentary, All Town, Aren't We?, Mr. Jack Spring. Welcome, Jack.
Hello, mate. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm all the better for having watched the documentary, actually. But let's start with that accent. You sounds a bit Londonish, like mine.
It is. My dad's actually from Grimsby and made his way down here. I think his first place of employment in the south was Crawley, and then he went to Sutton, which is where I grew up. So he's done the non-league circuit. And yeah, I was actually brought up a few yards from the Sutton United ground, so the Sutton Grimsby Jack Spring derby that's probably just had its last bow by looking at the league table is quite the thing. But yeah, I spent a lot of time up there as a kid. I think my dad first took me when we were in the Championship, or it was called Division 2 then, or Division 1, I think, a 4-0 loss at Watford. And then, followed us down the leagues. My fandom certainly didn't bring us too much luck on the pitch. And our time in non-league, particularly the first time, was sort of from the age of 14 to 19 for me. So my kind of sort of formative football away day years were all on the non-league circuit. But yes, there weren't many Grimsby Town fans in the Sutton Supporters Club growing up in the playgrounds. I wore that shirt with pride.
And I'll let people into a secret. Yeah, you're wearing your Grimsby Town attire there as we're chatting. But if you said, a Mariner, I mean, in the last 20 years, there's probably more pain and adversity. I mean, it probably makes great film topics and stories. Season 21-22, though, was featured in this series. I mean, it's like a Disney-fied version of being a Grimsby fan, isn't it? It's this sort of, you've got new local owners, you've got relegation back to non-league from the Football League, various trials and tribulations, and then promotion back via the playoffs and out of the National League. You've made a film of it, but even you must find it hard to believe that season.
It is mental. I mean, particularly, like as you said, having the vast majority of my Grimsby Town supporting life as, I think the phrase my dad uses, stealing defeat from the jaws of victory. So to go, you know, particularly that playoff campaign, which just sort of epitomised the bonkers nature of the 12 months that went before it, It was crazy. I mean, it was the most un-Grimsby Town thing to ever happen. I mean, and then we followed that up with the FA Cup run the year after, and we sort of got used to this mad stuff happening. But yeah, I mean, that 12-month period, I mean, to go from kind of Ian Holloway basically single-handedly getting us relegated to the new owners coming in. You know, when the new owners came in, even though we'd just been relegated, it kind of felt like a promotion because the era that went before that was, you know, the ownership that kind of took us down from the Championship all the way to non-league twice, had gone, and it felt like a new start. And then, yeah, I think the first 10 games of the season, we won 8 or 9 of them, were top of the league. Kind of the whole HMS was flying out. And then we lost 10 in a row in typical Grimsby Town fashion. Found ourselves outside the playoffs and then got in the playoffs. And then, yeah, then it was just kind of magic from there. And I think you said it at the start there, it was kind of the true Hollywood story from that season. You know, it was bonkers. It was absolutely ridiculous. It was, I think there's a line in the film, the greatest 2 weeks of Grimsby Town fans' lives. And it certainly was. It was just ridiculous.
Yeah, and it is, you know, it is non-league through and through. It's about the people. I mean, filmmaking-wise, what I loved about the series, it's about the football to a level, but really, and it's why we make this show, non-league's all about the people. And you've got people in there, celebrities, you've got the average fan on the street, you've got people that are involved in the Mariners Trust, but it's all about the impact on those people and that certain magic that we can never put our finger on, but it's so non-league.
It is. I mean, non-league it's a very human experience compared to the Premier League, isn't it? You know, these are sort of people that you can relate to that can not only hear the abuse from the touchline, but often give it back. it's totally removed from the kind of upper echelons of professional, you know, English football, professional sport, whatever way you want to look at it. But I just love it. You know, having, you know, I've, in my career, I did a TV show called Life in Non-League that was a sort of a comedy about a fictional non-league club. I've done this. We did a movie for Netflix all about Grimsby and the people of Grimsby. So it was the sort of epitome project of everything I like, kind of about, you know, kind of sport meets the arts. And it's just it's a human story, you know, about a ex-industrial town that's gone through real hardship, you know, the football club kind of following suit with that. And, you know, really the people that make the town tick. And, you know, I say that without wanting to sort of make it sound like it's the same as every other kind of sporting, you know, football documentary out there, because there've been a few now. But I feel from my point of view, being a Grimsby Town fan, you know, kind of really embedded in the club, we knew who to interview. You know, it wasn't some of the sports documentaries. It's the bloke that works behind the bar. It's the lady in the burger. But like, it kind of feels a bit stereotypical. I think we were lucky because we really knew the people inside out. We knew who would give good interviews. We knew who had emotional stories. You know, like, there wasn't a lot of second guessing. But that's all because the club's, you know, fantastic and, you know, really sort of represents a lot of clubs at a lower league football level. And, you know, I think anyone that likes non-league or lower league football, we just get it. You know, I think it's a different experience than, you know, being a Liverpool fan and just watching them on a TV 20 times a season and never going to a game. Like, we don't have that luxury. It's, you know, it's special. And I hope that came across.
It did. And it's one of the things, you know, I really did love about this is everything from the new owners, that, as I say, the celebrity fans, you know, comedian Lloyd Griffith, players like, look, Sean Scannell telling his story about, you know, dropping down and then fighting against, you know, being on the fringes of the squad, really not being part of selection, getting back, and then, you know, having his own talent at the end that hits him as well. I reckon even if you're not a football fan, you'd probably fall in love with the game because of the people and the way that you've told their story.
Yeah, I mean, there's two sides of it. There's a people side and then there's a narrative side. So my girlfriend's dad had no idea what was going. You know, he came to the Premier in Grimsby and probably was the only person in the cinema that didn't know what actually happened that season. And he was crying his eyes out and he loved it. But then I think, yeah, you're right. You know, the kind of human side. I mean, players, Sean Scandal, Big Scandal, as he calls himself, is one of the most humble, amazing human beings I've ever met. You know, there were a lot, you know, I was quite nervous about the players because I think, again, you're Premier League footballers, you see their interviews, their media trained, you know, to the hilt. You ain't getting any emotion or human stories out of them. And I think I was way more nervous directing Grimsby Town footballers than any kind of Hollywood A-lister because these are, A, these are my heroes, and B, they're footballers, so this is going to present a challenge. But they were all brilliant. You know, there were some stories, there were a lot of human stories that we couldn't get into the documentary, into the final edit. You know, we don't really touch on it that much, but there was an awful lot of loss around the club, you know, with COVID. You know, fans lost their lives, loved ones, you know. We didn't go too deep into that in the final edit. There were a few other kind of stories, you know, staff and players losing loved ones kind of outside of COVID that we didn't go into. I think the Scannell story, you know, is beautiful. There were bits from his interview that, you know, losing his parents, you know, I think it was his mum in particular, really young, how that rocked him and that started the kind of, you know, going from a Premier League sort of footballer all the way down to non-league. You know, there was some real stuff that didn't get in there, but there was, I think we got the balance right in terms of putting enough of the real nice kind of human stuff. And that's my job, I think, as a director. You know, the story was already there. You know, no one's going to question the script. It's not like doing a narrative thing. You know, for me, it was about, you know, right, how do we make this appeal to not just Grimsby Town fans?
And
you know, maybe not just all fans.
This show's about non-league, but as a filmmaker myself, it's sort of, that's intriguing for me because, you know, if you're making a film, if you're making a fictional film, you're in control of those people, aren't you? The actors, they you can vary the script, you can send the direction that you want them to go in. Documentary, you're making a story that's already there. It's one shot, different edit, different perspective, different juxtaposition of various scenes. You can make it look very different, and that's a tough gig. That's I suppose maybe it's like an analogy of a modern day footballer, because the modern day footballers that we football managers that we speak to week in, week out say that it's more like being a social worker nowadays. Is it sort of like maybe that step towards that when you're doing documentary rather than fiction?
Yeah, I mean, it was the first time I'd done documentary. I'd come from the kind of fiction side. So it was daunting in one way and it was nice in another. It was nice because we only actually decided to do the documentary when we were walking down the steps at the London Stadium after we got promoted. That, you know, we had an advantage over a kind of Welcome to Wrexham North Sunderland, you know, who start filming at the start of the season, in that we knew the story was good, you know. You know, luckily the club had employed someone throughout the season to do all the behind the scenes and kind of pitch side filming. So we had everything as if we were going to do it from the start of the season anyway. So that was nice, knowing the story was amazing. But I think, as you say, you know, my job really is then to get emotion and human stories out of the interviewees. And I think that's first picking the right interviewees. And I felt, you know, being a fan, that I feel like I know most people, you know, behind the scenes at the club. And supporters and stuff, and I'm involved in the podcast and stuff. I felt like I had a real, you know, insight on that, probably more, you know, way more than if they were going to get a director in that didn't know the club. And then then my job, the equivalent of being on set and getting good performances out of actors, is making sure you can hit the right emotional buttons with, you know, people that aren't actors in the interviews and getting kind of what you need out of them. And, you know, everyone was so forthcoming. You know, I think we filmed this a couple of weeks after we got promoted, so emotions were still very high. We replayed little clips from certain games. You know, we put this kind of sort of 10-minute highlight package together of things that happened earlier in the season. But I mean, you know, people didn't need it. Everyone's memory was spot on. I think when you go through something that emotional, particularly that, you know, that raw and close to the time, and, you know, and something really meant an awful lot to everyone involved. You know, we interviewed people, you know, Ben Fox had moved to Northampton Town by that point, you know, but he gave an amazing interview. You know, people had sort of, you know, there were a few players that had moved on, but you could really tell how much it meant to them. And yeah, it was just a real nice human experience.
And like all, you know, great documentaries as well, you flag up key moments that otherwise people from the external might have forgotten. You know, there's the three playoff games all going to extra time. But what I liked as well was the way you told the story. As you mentioned, the final ended up at the London Stadium. There was all that ticket furore, the price of the ticket, and how the Mariners Trust stepped up and enabled people that maybe couldn't afford to go to this, you know, greatest game in the club's history, to go along. And it's things like that that give you a bit of power, really, don't they? I mean, is this the best job other than playing for Grimsby?
I think so. I remember Mum saying on them premiere night, because it's a bit weird, because we did the three-day millionaire, the Netflix movie, that, and we had the premiere at the big cinema in Grimsby, 1,000 people there, and then for All Town and We, for this, we had, you know, basically a year later, the same building, basically the same premiere event. It was like deja vu, and my mum, you know, so I was a bit like, you know, when you do it kind of the second time, it's not as sort of shiny and exciting, but it was, because it was Grimsby Town. I remember my mum saying to me, and she was like, I imagine, you know, if someone told you as a kid you'd have all these. It was the tickets we sold for the premiere, it was our second biggest away attendance of the season. It was like 1,400 tickets. and, you know, she was saying, like, I imagine, you know, 10 years ago when you were a kid, you know, if someone said you'd have this, it would be amazing. But, yeah, I think, you know, I got to spend 12 months just watching us get promoted over and over and over again. And, you know, I think importantly for me, you know, Grimsby has a, you know, an improving but a negative kind of public perception. You know, the word grim in its name doesn't help itself, quite frankly. And, you know, we're all aware of its sort of fishing history and industrial decline, but maybe not aware of kind of the positive incline that the town is going through now. And I think through this project, I've hopefully helped shift public perception on the town as a whole, by bringing some of these human stories to the front and center, and sort of trying to reverse some of the damaging effects of the Sacha Baron Cohen effort a few years ago. I feel extremely fortunate that Jason and Andrew, the owners, trusted me to do it. I know they had interest at the start of the season from a broadcaster that they didn't go with, because they didn't have that kind of relationship and trust. So, yeah, it meant a lot. And, hopefully, I've painted the club in a positive picture. And, yeah.
And as you said, you know, we all know the story and know the outcome. But I will urge people to watch it on Amazon Prime. It does grip you, builds up the emotion. And that's why we love football anyway. We know that. Do you think, though, as you said, you've watched it back countless times now, has it rekindled your love for football?
I don't think I ever fell out of love with football. But I think it, people at the cinema, they're in tears and stuff. And I'm like, you know what happened? You know, it was only a year and a half ago. But I think even that gap for them, you know, there were things that they'd forgotten about. You know, like the Wrexham game, 5-4, you know, there were just goals, there were bits of that game that people decided to block out. I remember watching it and had to leave three times because it was horrific. I mean, I guess I can't answer your question better. Like, when we were actually going through the playoffs, it was horrific. It was the worst 2 weeks of my life. I think the playoff campaign for anyone is just 2 weeks of nerves. And, you know, to come through it in the way that we did, you know, you only got enjoyment at the final whistle. In the quarterfinal and semi-final, you got enjoyment for about 10 minutes and then realised you had to go again. And even at the London Stadium, you know, until we scored the winner, it was horrific. Like, I personally can't deal with that stuff. But then to actually watch it, spend a year watching it, knowing what the outcome is, and then watching it all nicely edited and shiny at the premiere and on Amazon and stuff. I think I enjoy it more not having the stomach churning nerves. I think the only bit that I enjoyed really out of that whole playoff campaign was when the final whistle went at London Stadium and it was all over and we were back on FIFA. And everything that comes with the EFL. But I think in retrospect, definitely enjoyed making it more than the actual campaign itself.
And those stomach churning moments, though, because this, you know, you had your premiere in January come out on Amazon Prime. Just before that, though, did you feel that sense of deja vu again? Because it wasn't a great run, was it? But I understand that once this came out, suddenly it rejuvenated the club again.
That's it. I saw a message on Twitter saying, well, until the Wrexham game the other day, we hadn't lost. Since it came out on Amazon, we've gone six unbeaten, and I was suddenly the lucky charm of the town. But But yeah, before that, we weren't doing too great. But yeah, I mean, it was. I think Grimsby Town are statistically the most promoted and relegated club in history. I think Notts County are only one promotion and relegation behind us after their heroics last year. So we're used to this as Grimsby fans. And I can't remember. Maybe there's been one season in my lifetime where we finished sort of comfortably mid-table, and by sort of the end of February, early March, you're kind of cruising. We don't have them seasons, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah.
I think Rochdale, before they went down, were in League Two for about 25 years or something silly. I think we'll be fine this season. I don't want to have to get the editing suite back out and do another documentary about how we escaped non-league. I do always think, in terms of our spells in non-league, I have always thoroughly enjoyed them. When growing up in Sutton, when Grimsby were playing anywhere north of Watford Gap Services, we'd go and watch Sutton United if they were at home. And they did this amazing thing. This is typical non-league, where at halftime they would open the fire escape so you could get out whenever you wanted. But that also meant, for people like me, my dad and my granddad, you could sneak in at halftime for free. So we'd spend the first half in the pub around the corner watching the horses, and then sneak in and watch the second half at Sutton. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. And when Grimsby were in non-league, and I never thought, there was a season where Sutton were my football league team and Grimsby were my non-league team. I never thought that would be the way around I'd have to see things. But some of the places you go, the people you meet, it is just special. I love it. And, as much as it would be a disaster for Grimsby to be back in non-league, I do think it is more enjoyable. There are better away days. The people are better. The clubs are better. There's less kind of bureaucracy. I think it's, I have to say no, never again with my Grimsby Town hat on. But if it did ever happen, it's always quite fun.
And with your documentary hat on then, is there maybe potential for another non-league club to get the Jack Spring treatment?
I don't, as much as I enjoyed making a documentary, I think I enjoyed it because it was this subject matter, and it was Grimsby Town. I have been asked by another, I think if I go into too much detail, it'll reveal, but someone at Grimsby Town, a club at Grimsby Town aren't usually friends with, got in touch. I think I'll stick to actors. We did look at doing a Grimsby Town second season on the FA Cup run last year to get into the quarterfinal. But I think personally, I'd always leave them wanting more. First of all, of entertainment. I think most people would do a second and a third. I think there's one on Woking being shot at the minute. I think there are plenty of great non-league stories, but I think it's Grimsby Town or nothing for me, unfortunately, in the football space.
Well, you've said, hopefully you've sown the seed for anybody that's not seen it. Available on Amazon Prime at the moment. Jack Spring, pleasure to get you on the Non-League Football Show. Thanks for joining us, and hopefully we'll speak to you again, who knows, in a few years' time.
Absolutely, mate. No, thanks for having me. Keep up the great work. I love the show, and I'm a big fan of what you guys do. So brilliant.
All right, once again, it's time to head on over to Non-League Paper Towers and welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. Executive Editor at the Non-League Paper, Mr. John Gouge. Welcome back, John.
Thank you, Tim. How are you?
I'm good, apart from the weather. I'm not quite sure. Every season, under the sun, under the rain, under the wind, and I'm hoping I'm not going to be looking at social media and seeing roofs of stands, and there's certainly going to be a few fences down, I would have thought, at the moment. And I'm hoping that this weekend we can get some football played.
Oh, it would be nice. I mean, I've just had a rare weekend off, and off to Lanzarote to try and escape this weather, and it wasn't much better than where we are in England. So yeah, it's a bit demoralising, isn't it? I mean, every week in the NLP we do a complete fixtures roundup, and the increase in midweek fixtures is unbelievable, just purely because of clubs who are
you could probably become a daily paper. In these last few weeks, you could become a daily paper with all the reports that need to be written.
Yeah, we could do. We could just write reams and reams of fixtures and as you say, reports. Team fans Thursday night. I think Plymouth Parkway. I've got a game tonight, and it's Saturday, and Sunday, and you know, and they're not the only ones. There's so many. It's just not relenting, is it? It just seems to go on. But you're certainly going to make the next month pretty busy for ourselves. But it will give us plenty to talk about, and that's what we love doing, isn't it? So.
Yeah, we'd rather have something to talk about. And this weekend, hopefully, or on the back of the weekend, we've reached the FA Vars semi-finals. Wembley in the air. There's plenty of rain as well, so hopefully that won't affect us. But two semi-finals, double-legged affairs. So, there's an opportunity, if things don't go quite right this weekend for the teams. We've got... Romford taking on Lincoln United and Worcester City against Great Wakering Rovers. And as we've heard from Phil Annetts already, there's going to be a new name on that trophy.
That's correct. Two huge games this weekend for the fan bases of those two clubs. They've really got it all to look forward to. 180 minutes from Wembley. Mm-hmm. And they all get their big... We'll get a big slice of the pie in terms of our home game as well. Wow, you know, this is what stuff dreams are made of. No club wants to go out in the semi-finals. They've come all this way. They put so much into their Vars run so far, and they've got to the semi-finals, which not many clubs can boast. I think just looking at two crunch games, and good to see a new name on the trophy as well. Worcester City, of course, have done so well in the Hellenic League. They've started off as many people's favourites, but they've got a great Wakering Rovers side who know what it's like to play at Step 4 football, and they're not going to be any pushovers. Similarly, Romford, their Essex Senior League rivals, and then them up against Lincoln United, and Lincoln obviously being a city that knows all about football success. So you know, there's four clubs there with potentially live the stuff of dreams. And as I say, Wembley, you can almost taste it now. You can almost smell it. But I say that's what makes the semi-final so good, because no team is going to want to lose this. It really is now or never.
Yeah. Well, Saturday the 11th, non-league finals day, already in my diary, and I'm sure there's probably a number of people involved in these semis this weekend that have penciled it in, at least. Some titles already in the bag, of course. Chesterfield finally made it over the line last weekend, and once again onto your front page as well, didn't they? And Farnham Town also wrapped up their combined counties league title. Two stories of success that have been going, well, pretty much all season, haven't they, both of those? And many are going to argue about resources that they had to do so. But we all know, and we've reported on so many sides that have had money or resources available to them. It doesn't always guarantee success. And indeed, with so many expectations on your shoulders, both sides at different levels of the pyramid, to wrap up their titles ahead of the end of the season... Really, they've both got to be applauded, haven't they? They've done everything right, basically.
Yeah, it's two very similar stories, as you say. Not if you ask Chesterfield manager Paul Cook, who will adamantly deny the fact that he's got the biggest budget in the National League. Whether that's true or not, I'm not so sure. He's adamant he hasn't, but I mean they've been tremendous this year, haven't they? You know, they're absolutely dominated. I think they were 23 points in front at some stage quite recently. It was only a matter of time before they got over the line, and and they did so in style in front of a huge crowd, and I think they're another team a bit like Wrexham and Notts County, who are going to be looking at League Two next year, and they'll have absolutely nothing to fear. They've got a manager who knows the level very well. They've got players who can adapt to that level, and they're only going to strengthen in the summer as well. And it's a big football club who's got their heart, their passion, and their desire back after a few years away. And I think they're going to go on to bigger and better things, and they'll probably win one of the best ever champions of the National League, just by the way they've done it, and the fact that they've got it over the line so quickly. And then Farnham Town as well, a team I know very well. I've just been off the phone to their manager. Obviously, he's been delighted. obviously they were, with the budget they've got, they were the team who were expected to win. I think everyone knew they were the team to beat. But it's just the way they've gone about doing it this year's series, it's just been tremendous. I think it was 25 consecutive wins. They were breaking records all over Europe. The one they wanted really was the Vars, which did disappoint them. They lost to Bridgewater United at home, sort of quite surprisingly. But they didn't let that disappointment go, and they kept their heads up. And Paul Johnson was just saying to me that he won't let anyone in holiday mode. He wants them all at it really from now to the end of the season. They've still got 9 games to play, Farnham, so that they're going to be really at it to the end. And that's a club with real ambition. They're not only looking at step 4 next year. They're looking at even beyond that, step 3, step 2, and what those owners have done there has been nothing short of fantastic, not just on the field but off it as well. They've transformed the place, and all of a sudden they're getting some big crowds down there at the Memorial Ground. And I think that could be the team. I wouldn't be surprised if they went back to back, and you could be seeing them in step through football in just over a year's time.
Yeah, and as you say, that it's about getting the infrastructure right off the field as much as getting right on the field, because there are big differences between the steps. We know, because we talk to the people involved behind the scenes and people on the field, the different, I suppose, just the different approaches, isn't it? Because you have different resources available in terms of the number of people there, and you have to get that sort of strategy, but also the organisational sort of aspects of it right. And it does seem that both of those clubs have done that, and that's built the success.
Very much so. Particularly in Farnham's instance, I mean, this is a team that's played Step 5 football for a long, long time. There's a lot of clubs around about the same sort of size in and around their area. They've been rivals with for a long time, and they probably won't play again for a while. But they've seized on the opportunity once Harry Hugo has come in. Yes, he's put some money down, but if you ask Harry Hugo, he'll be the first to say, look, this club needs to be self-sustainable. Paul Johnson was telling me that they've only actually had 2 home games on a Saturday in 2024. And that for a Step 5 club is very, very tough. You know, you're having to juggle a lot of balls, really. To try and keep revenue streams going. You know, we're getting crowds of 600-700 on a Saturday, but Tuesday night crowds could be as low as 200-300. So, you know, they're making big losses on there. So they've had to make a lot of sacrifices. And Paul was saying that he needs his team on it really too, in order to get these fans back in time for next year. I think they've got 6 home games on the trot coming up, so they've got plenty of opportunity to do that. But he wants them on it really, just to keep those fans happy and get them back next year. And that sustainable model can really sort of kick on to a next level.
But it's not easy though, is it? I mean, clubs in crisis. We heard after going live with the show last week, potential issues at New Salami in the Ryman Division 1 North. Rivals, well, they actually beat Stowmarket Town, who we had on the show last week. They beat them last weekend, but it does seem that maybe their long-term future in senior men's football might be in doubt, and more to come from that. Hopefully, is a club with a great tradition built up from Sunday football, youth football, coming through. And but there are so many issues that face clubs at every level at the moment. What was nice to see, better news from Rochdale this week, where the local and high-profile Ogden family have expressed an interest in buying in and supporting the club long-term. And certainly reading through their proposal and looking at the response from local people there, it does seem a very exciting and long-term way forward for Rochdale.
Yes, very much so. I mean, the news from Rochdale has been really, really encouraging ever since we got that. You had that dreaded press release stating that the club was in trouble and the funds were and the club it could fold by the end of March unless potential new investors were found. I mean, ever since then, the response has been tremendous, which for a club of the history of Richmond Rochdale, it just goes to show just how much these football clubs mean to the communities. I mean, there's been I think two or three consortiums who have both thrown their hat into the ring, and they've obviously now found a model with that they're really, really pleased with. And potentially it could be really good, really, really big. Rochdale are a football team or a football club who could potentially do what Chesterfield have done this year, and there's many of them in the National League if they get their house in order. And obviously they're a bit of a difference over the last couple of years, as Chesterfield have managed to sort themselves out, and now it looks like Rochdale may have found a solution to turn in the corner, and because this is a football league club. Remember, a club that playing in League One not too long ago, big history, a big fan base, and certainly a big football club in non-league circles. And I wish them all the very best. It'd be great to see them competing at the top end of the National League next year, and I think it's really exciting not only for the club but for the people of Rochdale as well.
Yeah, we spoke earlier in the show about Grimsby Town, and I think for lots of clubs, whether you drop it out of the Football League into the National League or further down the pyramid, sometimes you just need that time to regroup, rethink, and sort of lick your wounds almost before you can bounce back and then come back stronger. It sounds like the synopsis for a new Rocky movie, of course, but maybe there's a future Rocky movie based around non-league. Who knows? Player registration deadlines, certainly across steps 3 and 4, have ticked past today now, 5 o'clock on Thursday. There's various others, I'm sure, across the pyramid that will pass over the weekend, which means no more chances to bring in new faces. That, though, hasn't stopped the managerial merry-go-round in recent days. I'm guessing new bosses at this time of the season are going to have to work with what they've got, and maybe that's the ultimate test of management skills. Just running through quickly a few of those. Steve Pickup, the ex-Norwich Victoria boss, is the new manager at Barnoldswick Town down south on the south coast. Paul Town, interim manager James Ellis there has departed, and in comes Steve Tully, who had a success in charge at Truro City before he moved back into the pro game and got lots of experience there. A big name, and I guess that one, looking at Paul, we're probably out of the relegation worries. An appointment thinking ahead to next season.
Yeah, so it's already gone particularly well for Paul Town this year. Obviously, since Tommy Kinnick went, they've had Matt Tubbs come in, and he he started to turn things around. But unfortunately, didn't quite work out off a format. But I think they've got enough to stay in that division. Big club, obviously. Big fan base. Very passionate people down there, down in Poole. And yeah, Steve Tully is a big name. He's someone who he's someone who's more than capable of steering the ship. And wish him very well down there. Because as I said, it's a club that needs a little bit of stability at the moment, having had the same manager for 20 years. It's been an unusual situation. But I'm sure he can steer them to safety a little bit, and then they can stop getting that stability in place for next season.
Yeah, and also thinking ahead of next season, Barwell have made their interim choice of Jimmy Ginnelly and Guy Hadland permanent features in the dugout there. A number of other departures, though. Martin Carruthers, he stepped down at Matlock Town. Adam Yates and Mark Atkins, I think, taking charge until the end of the season there. Scott Dundas, he had announced he was going to leave Kidsgrove Athletic at the end of the season, but finds himself leaving immediately so that the club can get themselves organised on that front. You've got Leon Broadhurst and Stuart Bear Pierpoint. They've been sacked at Stourbridge. Not a great season there. And the big one, which out of the blue for me, Bobby Wilkinson departing from Weymouth. Jason Matthews assuming interim manager role there. I suppose clubs are looking ahead to next season. And, managers will always tell you that the more time they get at a club before the summer break, the better it is for them to plan and hit the ground running when the new season starts.
Well, that's right. Yeah, I mean, we've had a bit of an influx, and unexpected influx as well. I don't think I've ever known sort of quite so many managers go at this stage of the season. We're sort of 3 weeks before the end. Maybe it's a case of getting the house in order, really in preparation for next season. But yeah, no, it's been a bit of a whirlwind this week, which is not something we've said for a while. But few surprises in there. Certainly, I agree with you. I think Bobby Wilkinson going at Weymouth was a surprise. Been there sort of 18 months, and he had that great escape, didn't he, in his first season, keeping Weymouth at step two. And then has had a very steady season so far. Got him up to the comfort of mid-table, and yes, one win. Sorry, only one defeat in the last six games. So things are going well. So I don't quite know why they pulled the trigger there. Bobby Wilkinson, obviously someone who's been there, done that. The likes of Hungerford and Wildstone and Bracknell. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. And obviously Matlock as well. Martin Carruthers, they've had a bit of a sticky time of it of late. I think sort of 4 points. I think out of a possible 24, they've been sucked into the Northern Premier League Premier Division relegation zone. Relegation dogfight, should we say? I think they'll be fine. There's a few points in the bag there, but good to see Mark Atkins back. Alongside Adam Yates, he's back after about 10 years, I think, since he managed the club.
And we seem to be seeing that a lot at the moment
down there. And so good to see him back.
Yeah, there seems to be a number of managers that are sort of they've gathered their thoughts that they're sort of coming back into management after a number of years out. Which is good to see that when people like myself are sort of gathering years behind us, it shows that people will take a punt on the older guys. Talking about taking a punt on the older guys, non-league has always has sort of had this reputation of probably not unfounded of having a demographic of aging propensity. I think, but non-league day always seems to bring new faces in, which is and we had non-league day last weekend, big success once again, and it appears that the average home attendances across steps 1 to 4 alone increased some 24%, and the figures show that in the Isthmian South Central, which is always a difficult one for clubs because there's so many clubs close to one another, competing against a lot of pro clubs as well, which sort of says a lot about non-league day. But there, the increase across the Isthmian South Central was 35.9%. A big congratulations as well to Grantham Town. The club there seeing the biggest impact across those four tiers with apparently a 229.7% increase on their usual home turnout. Over 1,000 in attendance for their 0-0 draw with Sheffield in the Northern Premier League East. It was a 0-0 draw, but I think there was a red card and about 8 or 9 yellow cards as well. So I'm sure there was plenty to keep them entertained and hopefully bring them back. That's the idea of non-league days. Non-league days not just for one day of the year, it's for the rest of your life.
That's right. I mean, that's the beauty of non-league day. And Stuart Joe is an absolute genius for setting it up. I think for all of us, it's the best part about international weekend. It's not my favourite weekend of the season, but it is when you see crowds like this going into your non-league grounds. 24% are quite right across the board is brilliant. And occasionally you might get a club like Grantham who, you know, the fixture list just falls perfectly for them. Maybe against a local rival, and you'd be amazed by putting on some of the events that these clubs have been putting on with drinks vouchers or local bands or a bit of face painting for the kids. Little things like that make big difference. And obviously over the weekend it worked, and people come in their droves to watch their local clubs. So the idea now, or the aim now, is to try and keep them there. And obviously for us, every day's non-league day, and that's always my first response. But but for these guys, it's usually they may go and watch one of their local professional teams. But if they had a great experience at that non-league club, and if they enjoyed it, and they thought, actually, I could save a few pound here and go and watch this team who are going well or whatever. Yeah, that's what it's all about. And if you can put a 1% increase on every club's attendance, then it's done its job. But I've been delighted with attendances right across the board in non-league football. I think they're on the up all the time, and good weekends like that will only go to stand these clubs in good stead in the future as well.
And talking of good weekends with good attendances, National League promotional final at Wembley, it's been moved to Sunday the 5th of May from the Saturday. So now Sunday the 5th of May, 3 p.m. kickoff, to try and avoid the planned tube strikes that were scheduled for the Saturday. Early bird tickets have gone on sale via Wembley's ticket portal as well. Probably going to interest neutrals first, I guess, because if you're not in the playoff, or if you don't know if you're going to be in the playoffs, I'm not sure if you want to be there really, but particularly if you miss out and don't make that final. But fans whose side do make the final at a later date can move their allocated seat to their team's designated area as they could in previous season. So if your club is in the hunt for the playoff in the National League, then worth trying to snap up an early bird ticket, and it can be moved to the club's area if your team do make it. Early bird prices £20 for adults, concessions are £10. Under 16s, if they're accompanying a paying ticket holder, can go for free. Only one free ticket per paying ticket. Otherwise, under 16s, I think you're going to be £5. Sorry. So it is a celebration of football. We've seen some of these promotion finals in recent years being some of the games that people will recall for the rest of their lives, whether they're in their clubs involved or they are one of these neutrals.
Very much so. I mean, me in particular, I've always been chained to the office when the promotion final takes place on a Saturday. So I'm actually delighted it's gone to the Sunday for me personally. It means I can get to Wembley and I can experience for it for myself. It's usually big crowds, two rugby clubs, but so much at stake. It really is. They talk about the championship game being being the world's richest game. Not in terms of money with the National League, but the prestige of getting back into the Football League for these football clubs is huge. Just look at the emotions that everyone at Chesterfield this weekend, and there's going to be another team who are going to experience that, and there's clubs who have really put themselves in with a great chance. I'm thinking maybe Bromley, for example. You know that they've always been there or thereabouts over the last few years, and they've had another storming season. Are they ready now for that next step and following their local rivals Sutton United into the Football League? Barnet as well. They've had a bit of a mixed time of things in non-league over the last few years, but they're a team with rich Football League history. Solihull Moors will be looking to be similar to Bromley and get themselves up. And Aldershot Town, they've done great to get where they are. I think they're the longest serving club in the National League. They've had an absolutely storming season under Tommy Ridgington against all the odds, and they find themselves up in fifth, and that's dreamland for these guys at Aldershot, who I know very, very well. It's a club that has never, ever been to Wembley in all the 100 plus years, I think, of football in Aldershot. So I know they're very, very excited as well at the prospect of it. So right across the board, whatever two teams are going to be there, it's going to be an occasion that they'll never forget. As I say, the stakes are just huge, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. The stakes are just huge. It sounds like a great night out. It is a great night out, but there's no stakes involved. Well, there might be. I don't know. There's plenty of restaurants around Wembley. Weather permitting, of course, this weekend, plenty of league action. FA Vars reports for the first legs of those semi-finals, I guess. Anything else we can expect to read in this weekend's non-league paper?
Yeah, we've got plenty in there. I had a nice chat with my new mate. Love Island. Tom Clare is back at Macclesfield Town, back scoring goals as well, which is great. What a nice guy, and he had a really nice, really good story to tell us. Really, and about life as a reality TV star, and getting back into the football, which is his first love and his main passion, really. So yeah, we had a nice chat, but with all these football matches, it's absolutely brimming. So we haven't got the the room really that we'd love to have, because there's so much going on. But you can be assured that with all these stories that we've been discussing and more, it'll be another jam-packed edition.
Well, I look forward to reading all about it in this weekend's non-league paper. John Couch, thanks for joining us once again on the Non-League Football Show. We'll speak to you soon.
Thank you. Cheers, Tim. All the best.
And that then is it for this week. A couple of managerial additional moves after I spoke with John Couch earlier. Mark Moseley leaves my own club, Hazen Yeading United. Delroy Preddy and Peter Stanford stepping up to take interim control. And the previously mentioned Martin Carruthers. We mentioned that he was leaving Matlock Town. He's gone straight back into a dugout at Basford United. Meanwhile, some sad news in the clubs in crisis section. Spartan Liga's nomadic Santa Pantelimon have announced the costs of the period have proven far too great for them and have announced that they are to fold. Don't forget to get involved on social media at Non-League Show and myself there at Tim Fuel, FUELL. And as ever, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, Apple Podcasts, but also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, Castbox, iHeart, J7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic, via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe, enjoy your football. Thank you and goodbye.